All right, hi everybody, and welcome to Lecture 88 in this American History Program of History at Our House for the junior and senior high class. We're continuing with our careful approach to the world that we see around us, and we are looking at an episode which is basically a bridging episode between the entry of America into this new policy of being an international police power and its current efforts in that regard in the so-called War on Terror. So we're going to look at this bridging episode, and it's called the Cold War. Before we do that, let's do as we will do at the beginning of each of our classes from now on. Go ahead and cement our factual understanding of this crucial anchoring information. So, for those of you who are ready with Facts Practice 2A, get it out, and I will do the give you the online stopwatch to track your progress. Again, we'll do 3 minutes, and if you are on the recordings, I invite you to do the same so that you can have the same benefits. All right, so as long as whoever's ready is ready, on your mark, get set, go! Two down, one to go. All right, that's the 3 minute mark. So if you couldn't get it done, just go ahead and write down that time and be sure to practice it a little bit more. And of course, it's entirely up to you how quickly you want to do it and what your standard is going to be. That's up to you. And you know, the only purpose of this here is to help you automatize. certain associations and certain facts of, so that you can recall them effortlessly in your future historical thinking. So we'll continue to do this, and I'm convinced that it's a worthwhile exercise in that regard. I don't like to overemphasize it, because memorization without understanding is definitely wrong. But I think that you guys are in a position of sufficient understanding to benefit from memorization as a complement to the work that you are doing. So that is my recommendation. Now, what I'd like to do is turn to the character of the period that was created by the Truman Doctrine. So, yesterday we looked at this document, I believe, briefly, called the Truman Doctrine. And I read to you kind of the core passage of that doctrine that makes this comparison between two ways of life. And we can read into that. It's not explicit, but evidently we can read into it that the two sides here are that American way of life, broadly speaking, a system of political freedom. You can see that keyword throughout that particular representation. And then you have the second way of life, which we're going to look at specifically, which involves the oppression of people by certain groups. And President Truman steps up and says, I believe it must be the policy of the United States to support free peoples who are resisting attempted subjugation by armed minorities or by outside pressures. That particular phrasing we're going to learn a little bit more about today. Okay, and you will see why he used that, and it will give us, I think, a little bit of a clue into kind of the specific origins of the Truman Doctrine and its overall kind of impact on history. But before we do that, I want to just take a moment to properly care for your intellectual apparatus moving forward here with regard to this term doctrine, right? Because we've encountered it before, and we're using it here now, and it's going to be an anchor fact, and it's worthwhile making sure that we don't settle on a, let's say, woozy understanding of that term. So, don't think we've spent enough time on it, so I want to just briefly do that now. So, when you see this, you know, we read these passages, we read from the Monroe Doctrine, we read from the Truman Doctrine, we have examples of it, which are good, but what is, for you, what do they add up to? Why are, you know, this is kind of similar to the discussion we had earlier about what a revolution is. We had the example of the American Revolution and then the example of the Industrial Revolution, so we have what's called the good amount number of concrete examples to concretize the abstraction. Well, same thing goes here. We have two concretes, as they're called, solid, factual examples of a doctrine. So what is it? Why do we call these things doctrines? The Monroe Doctrine, the Truman Doctrine. And what does that mean? What is a doctrine? Bria, go ahead. Can't hear you.
Isn't it where someone teaches something?
Okay, the issue of teaching can be involved there, not necessarily. So teaching is a very Now, you have, as you know, here we go. I went to dictionary.com. And so what you are thinking of would be a good example of something that is taught. Here would be definition number two. And so, yeah, sometimes the word doctrine is used to describe, in this case, religious doctrine. So you can have, for instance, a body of teachings relating to a particular subject. So that would be known as Catholic doctrine or Lutheran doctrine. So yeah, we have that application of the term. But here we're looking at a different usage. And I think there's a better, there's different definitions online. I like this particular one. A principle or a body of principles that is taught or advocated. That's a pretty decent set definition. And it's good to drill down on these. Remember last year I taught you guys the art of reduction, meaning when you get a definition and you want to understand it, you have to take the component concepts and make sure you understand them too. And so you have the idea of advocacy. So that is, when you have the idea of advocating something, I think a good synonym for that is recommend. So a doctrine is a set of principles that is recommended. And in the case of the type that we are looking at, we are talking about government. So that's there in our initial kind of offering. A policy advocated as part of a government, that's a doctrine. Okay, a set of policies advocated for a government. And when we talk about policies, if we're not terribly clear on that as well, we can drill down and say, okay, what's a policy? Oh, it's a course of action. A course of action. So, all right, go back to our original definition. So, a doctrine is a set of actions advocated for a government. It's good. When we, you know, when you, as I say, analyze definitions and reduce the concepts involved, you can almost always get to, I mean always in my experience, you can always get to formulations in simpler terms, in words that are more comfortable for you and more revealing for you than the ones you're going to find in the dictionary itself. And so hopefully, you know, again, you can enjoy this outcome and say, okay, a doctrine is, yeah, we could say it's a policy advocated for a government. But another way of putting that would be a set of actions recommended for a government by, in this case, Monroe, Truman. So typically doctrines are advocated or recommended by presidents, by the leaders of the government. Right? The people who are in a position of leadership who, you know, can rightly be designated as those who should be making the recommendations. Right? I mean, these are the chosen leaders of the country. What do they advise the country to do? So that's what a doctrine is. A set of principles, recommended actions for a government by the leader of the government. So that's the Truman Doctrine. So if you want to just have that definition in your mind, that can be helpful rather than just the word, which might, you know, be kind of woozy for you, and when it is, then it kind of turns into an intellectual dead end. And that can be intellectually very paralyzing, because you use a word, you don't know what it means, and that means that the word becomes, you know, the end of the line for you. It's not a doorway into future thinking and more interesting thoughts and connections. It becomes, well, the last thing that you are able to regurgitate, and that's it. Right? It's done. And so you've got to, when you encounter these terms, try to be more ambitious about them. Otherwise, basically, they are the end of the line for you. So, The Truman Doctrine is a set of recommended actions proposed for the American government, in particular in the area of foreign policy, by President Harry Truman. Okay. And so it has to do, as we know, with this situation that we've returned to this over and over here to make sure that it kind of sinks in. It has to do with the situation following World War II. In that situation, the United States and its temporary ally, Communist Russia, worked together to overcome Nazi Germany and Imperial Japan and were successful in that. But the enemy of my enemy is merely my temporary ally. And as history is quite clear in demonstrating, is the most common set of its most common occurrence in history is that temporary allies become the next set of enemies, which is what this map shows us. It shows us an American-supported side in blue and a Russian-supported side, not supported, ruled side in red, and a standoff at the end of World War II. So, one possibility, which is really interesting, and we haven't had a discussion of it yet, I enjoy having a discussion of it with you guys, one possibility at the end of World War II was for the United States to try to return to normalcy. It happened after World War I, right? And could anybody here see that it was a possibility at the end of World War II as well? In fact, maybe you could make the case that it was more worth doing than it had ever been. I tried to present it from the point of view of the way that Americans were thinking of it at the time, because that's the way things went, and the Truman Doctrine reflects that. But when you think of the idea that this situation was just a perfect signal to America that it really should embrace normalcy. What do you think of that? What was normalcy, first of all? What would that have been? If you could even call it that anymore, because it's not that normal anymore. Alexander?
Well, what used to be normalcy is that you go back to, like, how the not interfering in Europe, you just go back and sit in your big country and just mind your own business, pretty much. You don't follow the Monroe Doctrine.
Yeah, okay. Mind your own business, but in the sense of, we're talking about the policy of a government, we're talking about the defense of the rights of Americans, and so the business there consists of defining a defense policy that would be focused entirely on the protection of the rights of Americans. That would be normalcy. Okay. So, my question for you that I wanted you to think about was, what would that look like now? You know, looking at this map, what would normalcy, if you had been an advocate of normalcy at the time, was it possible to advocate it? Or was it somehow like inevitable that the United States should have to now, you know, adopt this Truman Doctrine idea? What do you think of that? I want you to try to challenge this moment here in history. What would have happened if the United States had said, we are going to return to normalcy again? What would have been behind that, if we look at it from a policy again of self-defense, what would have happened? What would have been the meaning of that? Timothy?
Well, if the United States returned to normalcy now, Russia would probably start becoming a big bully, and there'd be another world war, this time against Russia, and then the U.S. would have to join in again, and it would be an endless cycle of world wars.
Okay, that's part of the projection, right? Is this idea that there would be an endless cycle of wars. Okay, so what would happen almost certainly would be that continental Europe would have been overrun by communism. I think that was a pretty reasonable projection, in part because people throughout Europe have always, since the French Revolution, increasingly believed in socialism anyway, which is just kind of a variant on communism. And so a lot of people in Europe actually would have wanted to try communism. The Russian Empire was powerful. It would have taken over. I'm not sure what would have happened to Great Britain. It might have been that Great Britain could maintain its isolation from the rest of Europe. But I think the rest of Europe would have been conquered and become communist. I think it's a pretty reasonable prediction. So what? From a perspective of, from a Monroe Doctrine type perspective, so what? Alexander?
Well, not much really until Soviet Union starts trying to go overseas.
Okay, right. So if you are of the view that communism could kind of build this base in Europe, and then it would grow from there, and it would continue to grow, and it would be just this monstrous imperial force, and it would eventually take over the whole world. Right? So yeah, this is part of the thinking that even people that would have mostly advocated American self-defense were concerned with that outcome. They looked at it and they said, well, communism is an ideology that would lead to or would want to try to achieve a takeover of the world. So we're going to see that this, and eventually, you know, America would have to come head-to-head with that. So yeah, even from that perspective, if you kind of were mostly focused on American self-defense, I think if you looked at the threat of communist Russia, you could reasonably kind of fear that and project an outcome that was really connected to self-defense as well. So yeah, it was hard not to look at communism and advocate an international police action against it. I don't personally think so, by the way. This world conquest hypothesis, I think, was flawed. As it turns out, communism proved to be self-destructive, which makes a lot of sense, because it is so profoundly wrong. And the truth is, very strangely, the United States was responsible for propping up the Soviet Union, first of all in the 1920s, and then later. Without American aid in the 20s and in World War II, it's almost certain that communist Russia would simply have collapsed in on itself, which is really perverse. So it's one of these problems where, again, you create a monster through this policy of temporary alliances. The United States, with all of its overabundant wealth and power, supported the Soviet Union made it possible for it to become a much bigger threat than it ever would have been. And I think ultimately, if the Soviet Union had conquered Western Europe temporarily, I think it would have been disastrous for communism. I think that ultimately all of its energies would have been absorbed by attempting to suppress the people of Western Europe. And I think it would have burned out a lot faster than it did, actually. So anyway, that's my own hypothesis concerning this. I think that actually a return to normalcy probably would have been a good thing again. and it's hard to make that case because it's purely hypothetical. But that's the view that I take. I take the view that, in fact, that this police action that the United States took created a very strange arrangement, which hasn't been good for a lot of the different parts of the world that it affected. And that's what we're going to see next week, is the problem of the United States extending this policy beyond Europe into the rest of the world had some unforeseen consequences, and a lack of clarity in terms of the objectives of the United States in terms of resisting the spread of communism turned out to be very damaging. So it's a really interesting scenario. I think that a return to normalcy after World War II would have been the best thing. That's not, certainly not what happened. So it's not easy to say exactly how that would have turned out. But I think that Europe kind of deserved whatever it was going to get. And not all the people within, of course. But I think in some ways Europe has been coddled by the United States and allowed to evade a lot of the consequences of what its own people have advocated and have wanted, and which logically their history would actually lead to. And so now Europeans just continue to be pretty much the same way, and they haven't really learned enough from history. So it's kind of an interesting problem. How do you help? I mean, you know, the United States went out to become a world police power to try to make the world a better place. But can you actually do that despite the people that you're trying to help? Is kind of the interesting challenge that I think is involved there. We'll look at that more next week. What I want to do right now is I want to set up the problem of kind of how this situation, what this thing was that's called the Cold War, and kind of help you to see what the scope of it was, how big it was, how big of a challenge it was that the United States was taking on, and how this is going to start to lead to problems between America and the Islamic world. So, let's go back to the Truman Doctrine here for a sec. I read to you this, what I think is kind of the heart of the doctrine, the main passage that explains what America is going to do. But if you notice, what I wanted to do was kind of explain this passage to you a little bit, because it's a curious thing. If you look at this one especially, it's a weird passage. It says, I believe that it must be the policy of the United States to support free peoples who are resisting attempted subjugation by armed minorities or by outside pressures. What do you make of that? You know, just on a purely abstract basis, without knowing the specifics, right? Because there's something strange going on here, but This is 1947. It's hard to pin this down, I know. You guys are not quite used to, I think, this kind of critical analysis either. Just kind of generally looking at abstractions and parsing them and figuring them out. And that's why I wanted to walk you through the doctrine concept. But, you know, you got a lot of words here. It's kind of what I'm challenging to think of. All these words, what do they mean? Or what do they fail to mean? Or what are you not seeing that you would expect to see? These are the kinds of questions that I'm asking. Juliet?
Well, it doesn't actually say what type of armed minorities or subjugation. It doesn't actually say what type of form or anything.
Okay. And yeah, so it's very general is kind of what you're saying, right?
Yeah,
I agree. And that's a very important identification. It's very wide open, right? Armed minorities, what is that? And what is outside pressure? Right? What is outside pressure? Huh? Define that for me. I'm putting some outside pressure on you guys right now. Maybe it's inside pressure, because we're all in the same class. What is that? You see, that's my point is, what kind of language is this? It's very strange. And one thing that's also not clear in here, which we're going to get to, is what are free peoples? Alexander?
This language is called, well, we're talking right now, but basically in the future we can do whatever.
That's interesting. Yeah, you're onto something there. Right? This is a kind of open-ended language that kind of allows you to swallow up anything that comes at you. Right? And so that's a good identification right there. So yeah, it's a very open-ended thing. Now, it's meant to be that way, but it's also meant to feel as though it's conjuring kind of specifics. Because you've got, on the one hand, you've got all of these countries that the United States is protecting. But what's kind of curious is that, well, you can see that there's a kind of arc here, and that it extends all the way over here to these countries down here, Greece and Turkey. And as it turns out, that's what the Monroe Doctrine is about at first. If you look at the Monroe Doctrine, right at the outset, it says, I want to talk about Greece and Turkey. And what it says in the speech is that there are communists in Greece that want to take over the government. You read through the whole thing. It's a kind of a long-winded thing that says, the Greek state is today threatened by the terrorist activities of several thousand armed men led by communists. So they are the armed minority within Greece that he is talking about. And then if you keep going through this long, as I say, long-winded speech, then we have the future of Turkey as well, as the supposedly freedom-loving people. We're going to get to that in a sec. Well, not in a sec, next week. And it says, well, these are different circumstances from those of Greece. The problem for Greece is its national integrity. Greece is under threat from this behemoth here that throughout its history has wanted to have direct access to the Mediterranean. To have that, you got to go through, pardon me, Turkey. You have to go through Turkey. So the whole Truman Doctrine begins with the situation in Greece and Turkey. And that's what carries it through to this formulation. The free peoples, supposedly, are Greece, the Greeks and the Turks. And they are resisting subjugation. In Greece, it's an armed minority of communists. In Turkey, it's the outside pressure of communist Russia pushing at Turkey, wanting to conquer Turkey. So the Truman Doctrine is more about these countries specifically. It begins with these countries, not even so much France and Britain and the great historical allies of the United States, but it begins with Greece and Turkey. We don't know much about their modern history, but we will learn more about it next week a little bit. And so it has to do with the United States looking at the Soviet Union and seeing this vast, threatening country, huge, more than twice the size of any other country in the world. Here's kind of an old map, it's a new map, but it's of the Soviet Union as it once was, with a cool kind of 3D projection. And the United States was looking at the Soviet Union at the end of World War II, and what it saw was this really large empire potentially threatening, you know, huge amounts of the world. We have the obvious fear of expanding communism towards Europe. So we got the United States making a barrier here and saying, we're going to police that and we're going to stop you from going in that direction. And then the United States, at the end of World War II, one of the reasons why the United States bombed Japan was so that the Soviet Union could not invade Japan and take over parts of it and force them to have communism. Instead, the United States would be the only country in place to actually form and nurture the new society of Japan, much like it was doing for West Germany. So the United States wanted to stop that from happening. But the thing is, we've got this huge country. And we have all of this border that needs to be somehow dealt with. If you're an international police power and you're worried about this massive, you know, bully expanding outwards, then you also have to worry about all the rest of this stuff to some degree. And the bad news was, part of the bad news was, China became communist in 1949. So now, the most populous country in the world, you've lost that one. You know, you wanted to stop communism from growing, but you lost China. The United States tried to support the Chinese against communism, but failed. And China became a communist country in 1949. So now the situation is getting worse and it's kind of scary. Remember how we were talking about, can you go back to normalcy? And somebody was making the point, or Alexander maybe, that, well, if communism just keeps on growing and growing and growing, eventually it'll be at your doorstep. And that's kind of what some people were really, really worried about. Because they saw the Soviet Union expanding into Eastern Europe. And then in 1949, they saw China go communist. And they thought, this is like a historical force that we can't stop. Or, you know, it's kind of a natural trend, this adoption of communism by various parts of the world. We can't combat it. Everybody seems to be going that way. If we don't police the world, this will happen more and more and more. So this is the fear, which leads to this thing called the Cold War. That's very much guided by the Truman Doctrine. And the concept is contain, you know, perform this containment. Put these barriers in place to prevent communism from spreading. Keep it contained within there. And hopefully you don't have to fight big wars to keep communism from spreading. And so, small wars, if you have to fight them, which they did happen, okay, you might have to. For instance, communism spread into Korea. And at the end of the war, Russia had taken over the northern part, and America had liberated the southern part. This was a lot like what was going on in Western Europe. And so the United States went in and fought what was called the Korean War to save South Korea. So it was a small war to prevent the expansion of communism in that direction. And it just seemed like, wow, everywhere you look, the Soviet Union is trying to expand communism all around. So we have to police the world. We have to stop this potentially huge war of the future, this war that we fear will come. We have to stop it from happening by containing communism. As much as possible, not fight. Well, this is where we get the term Cold War. Because as much as possible, the two countries, the Soviet Union and the United States, both had nuclear weapons. And should there ever be a general war between them, what everybody was really worried about was that it would turn into a nuclear war. And if you've got two countries launching hundreds of nuclear weapons at each other, you possibly have basically a destruction of the habitat that is the Earth, because the radioactivity, the fallout, the destruction of life and of nature and so on, it becomes so devastating that the planet won't support life anymore. And everybody dies. So, there was this general fear that that would be the outcome. And so they didn't want to fight the Soviet Union in a war. They wanted to contain it. And that's where we get the term Cold War. The Cold War means a policy of resisting the spread of communism, if necessary, fighting small wars like the one in Korea against small threats, but not confronting the Soviet Union directly, rather just working to contain it, prevent it from spreading its nefarious ideology to the rest of the world. So this is the setup for our last chapter of American history. The last chapter of American history that we're going to study next week has to do with, well, the rest of this border over here. Communism already spread there, so there was nothing doing to stop that. But what about the rest of this? What about this way? What about this way? So this is stopped. This is stopped. Okay, this wasn't stopped. Okay, but what about this? Of course, what do we call this region? What is this part of the world? Here. It's called the Middle East. And it is the region with which the United States is currently very deeply entangled. It's going to be the new challenge in terms of the world police power trying at first to stop communism from spreading there and becoming entangled in the affairs of the people there who have their own culture and their own desires and so on as to how they want to run their lives and the United States wants to go there now and kind of organize how life is supposed to be. And that's going to lead to some serious conflicts. So that's what we cover next week. The Cold War leads to a new situation, a new problem for the world police power, having to do with what to do with this area. All right. That's it for today. So thanks, everybody. And tomorrow, of course, is History Through Art. And then we'll pick up the story with the very latest chapter of American history leading up to the War on Terror. Talk to you tomorrow. Bye for now.
Bye, Mr. Paul.
Bye.
Bye-bye.